This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to people about the benefits they've experienced in sobriety, the things they're doing or they've tried since going sober that they'd never have done as a drinker. We talk a little bit about how they got sober, but we also then focus on why they enjoy staying sober. And today I'm talking to Laura to find out more about her benefits and her story. Hello, Laura.
Hello, Louisa.
How are you?
I'm really well, thank you. And it's an absolute pleasure and honour to have been invited to come and talk to you today.
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful to see you because obviously we've talked a lot, but we haven't actually met. So tell us a little bit about your story, your background, your journey, whatever you want to share. How long have you been sober?
So I've been sober now for just over 2 years and 3 months. I went sober on the 15th of June in 2022. A little bit about the story that led me to that, because we've all got stories, haven't we, that led us to the point where we became obsessed about drinking or we were drinking too much. Everyone's got their story and their reason. For me, it started way back. I'm not going to go into too much detail about it, but I did have an abusive and neglectful childhood. My dad died when I was 2, which left my mum with 3 children. And I then grew up with an alcoholic mum. So with that, you've got all the neglect and issues that come with that. So it was very tricky. She made some pretty poor choices in relationships herself, which impacted us as a whole family. But for my mum, she then got work in a pub. So she worked full time in a bar. My whole childhood was just surrounded by alcohol permanently. There was a big cabinet at home that was full of alcohol. My school holidays, I would spend at the pub where she was working. I'd often go out with my mum and she would drink and drive. It was just it was life. That's what life was. You were just surrounded by alcohol. That was the norm, absolutely. But by the time I was 12, I started to be able to explore my own personality in life a little bit more. And at that age, at that young age back then, we're going back probably 45 years, we would start to go to bottle parties. Do you know what those are?
No, I was going to ask you.
It was a big buzz thing that was going on at school. We'd go to bottle parties. And what that meant was is you would all bring a bottle of alcohol with you. And we're 12. We're children. But it was the norm. So we'd go to someone's house, have a party, everyone bring a bottle of alcohol, and we'd get absolutely smashed and think it was hilarious. And it progressed. By the time I was 15, I was living a very big party life. My mum let me have lots of parties at our home. And I was going out clubbing. You didn't need ID back then either. So you could just walk in and lie about your age and get a drink at the bar. And even drinking in parks, we would meet each other and get some drink and go and hang out at the park. So a lot of drinking in my childhood. And then that sort of progressed occasionally. I wouldn't drink, of course, all the time, but occasionally we would go out and get completely smashed. But then I grew up. So then it was time to get married and have children and get a little bit sensible, which I did during pregnancy. But I then got into the mummy wine culture that a lot of people talk about, and it was huge. We would get together. It was a reward for us mums. We were working hard, looking after the children. We deserved to have a nice glass of wine at the end of the day. Sometimes during the day, we thought nothing of meeting up at the local pub. The children would play and have fun. And we would be there drinking wine and stagger home. So not very responsible behaviour. And I do still carry some feelings of guilt around that because I grew up in that environment. I created something similar. I was never a blackout drunk though, but I enjoyed it. We would even have parties for Halloween, for example. I work with children. I love children. So I would throw these big Halloween parties. But these Halloween parties would have a big cauldron of punch, and we'd walk around drinking out of these spooky goblets and think that was great fun. But it would always get a little bit messy. So yeah, with the mummy wine culture, it got worse. And then I separated from my husband, and lockdown happened. I wasn't in a great relationship at the time. And like a lot of people, I turned to alcohol as a coping mechanism during lockdown. And because I wasn't in a very happy space. And it got to the point that it was becoming obsessive. I started to drink almost every day. I'd have over a bottle of wine. Sometimes then would go on to more, open a second bottle or go on to some vodka, even if I was alone. Any excuse to go to a pub, I would use. Any excuse to celebrate and have a drink, I would use. Until I found myself pouring wine and gulping out of the glass a couple of gulps and then topping it up. And I knew there was something wrong at that point. I had denied it and I was in denial up to that point, but I started to think this is not right. And I'm not proud, but there were times when if I was going to visit people, it only happened a couple of times, but I would buy a tin at the garage and drink that in the car on the way there to get a buzz. And I knew it was wrong. And I felt very bad about myself. So there was a lot of negative self-talk going on as well. But very quickly, actually, from the point of got starting to gulp the wine and buy a couple of tinnies, I realized I didn't want to end up like my mum. I knew it was a problem and had to do something about it. And that's when my life turned around and I decided I was going to reach out and see what I could do to stop drinking.
That's a momentous decision, though, isn't it? I mean, it really is to it's strange. Sometimes it isn't a rock bottom. It's like a really just small thing. It seems like gulping wine. I'm gulping wine and topping it back up. That's my sign. Yeah, everybody's so different.
Exactly. And I'd be thinking about it too much. I
Oh,
was
yeah.
consumed by the thought of alcohol. Did I have enough in the house? Did I need to get some on the way home? When was I going to have a drink? What shall I drink tonight? You know, it was just a completely obsessive. I feel very lucky that I wasn't at the point that some people are where I needed to drink as soon as I woke up in the morning. I wasn't drinking at work. I was a very much a functioning alcoholic, and I feel lucky for that. And I also feel really lucky that I caught it in time, I believe, before it got to that point, but not without the damage that had resulted really with relationships and life choices and you know. When you're obsessed and addicted to a substance that is affecting your mental health and the way you think, it's not until you stop, as you know, Louisa, that you suddenly realize that you've just been living in a cloud,
Yeah.
a dark cloud for many, many years. It literally feels like a rebirth once you get over the initial struggles. That's how I saw it.
Yeah, exactly. And what did you do then? So you sort of identified you wanted to do something. Did you go to AA or did you contact anybody?
Yeah, so I have a friend who was an alcoholic many years ago, and she worked with AA and actually ran a few AA meetings, and I knew that. So I reached out to her and she invited me to a couple of meetings, which I went to. They were very good because it helped me listen to other people's stories and feel less alone for sure. However, I didn't find AA was for me. I know it works for lots of people, and everybody has their own choices and opinions and ideas of how they want to lead their life. But for me, I was finding it difficult because I was listening to really sad stories quite a lot, and it was actually making me feel worse. I was feeling down. I then discovered, only probably 3 weeks into sobriety, I was introduced to the sober community. I had no idea it existed at all. I was told by a friend, have you heard about the sober community on Instagram? It's huge. There's loads of people on there. Get yourself on. So that's what I did. And I've not looked back since. It's been incredible. It's a fantastic community. It's full of thousands of people, just like you and I, that are normal and have had our struggles in life and are willing to share our experiences and support each other.
It's amazing, isn't it? I don't quite remember how I found it. Nobody gave me any directions to go and have a look. I think I must have just typed in hashtag sober, or maybe the algorithm read my mind or something. And I started
Yeah.
sober posts and following a couple of people. But it is phenomenal, isn't it?
It is absolutely phenomenal. And the connections you make and the people are so kind. And the things you can learn from each other as well. The feeling of being supported, less alone. We're all evolving all the time, I believe. Unfortunately, people can get stuck, and alcoholism and addiction is a big part of that. You're literally just stuck in that whole routine and cycle of personal abuse, really. You're abusing your own body, your own mental health.
That is exactly what it is, personal abuse.
Yeah. It
And
is.
it is like the worst monotonous treadmill.
Oh, yeah.
If you're not at rock bottom, I mean, everybody's rock bottom's different as well, isn't it? I think one of the things that's really interesting is that life still goes on when you're sober. You still have all those things going on,
Yeah.
the tough times or the run-ins or the, problems with work or life or relatives. You just feel a bit better able to cope.
Yeah, that's it. I think initially, when you're in the depths of addiction, all you can really think about is giving up and coping with giving up and how your life's going to be so much better when you do. But then you, after the pink cloud time that some people go through, probably 3 months in, and you feel really euphoric because you think, wow, I feel amazing. It's come out of your system now, you're buzzing, everything seems clearer, you can smell better, you can see better. You're really up there. But then those challenges, like you say, they still keep coming, and you're much more able to cope with each challenge that comes, but they're still there. Because you're not masking it by having a drink. I've had a shit day. I'm going to go home and have a drink. You actually work on it and you work on yourself. Because, as you say, you are. It's self-abuse. It's self-loathing, I believe. Nobody can really be happy if they're in a situation where they're perpetually looking for another drink, the next drink, something to make them feel better. Get that high to release the negatives that they're feeling. But sober, you deal with those negatives, you think about them, you explore them, you look at ways you may have been able to do things differently. And through that, you get stronger and stronger all the time. Each challenge is a learning opportunity for sure in your self journey, in your growth.
So when you reached out then to the sober community, did you just contact people out of the blue? I'm sure there's people listening that may not have heard of it and may not realize that there's this Instagram community. They're listening to this podcast. Hashtag sober, you type in hashtag sobriety, see if somebody resonates with you. And I don't know from your experience, but I just sent messages to people and you'd be amazed. People respond and they're kind and open.
Yeah, so kind. So I knew somebody that was in the sober community. So I linked up with them and then linked up with some of the people that they knew. I was then put in touch with Michael, Happy Without the Hooch, that we both know. And he's absolutely incredible and has done a huge amount of work for the sober community to bring people together, and also to really put a humorous take on life and the tragedies that we experience, and to just keep on keeping on. So I connected with Michael as well. We got on instantly. I messaged him, and some of the stories that he'd put up, you can interact with people on those stories. They might put an empowering post or a funny post, and you can comment, and that will go to that person's individual in box, and then they can respond back to you. So I found very quickly I was starting to make natural connections with people just by reacting and responding to things they might have posted or things that resonated with me, sharing things that I saw that I thought, well, that's really helped me. So this could help others. So I would then share on my page. And very quickly it escalated. I didn't expect it to happen at all, but before I knew it, I'd been connected to about 2,000 people, and I thought, wow, this is huge. I've got 2,000 connections at this point, and I've only just started. That's how wonderful it really is. And then by following other people's stories and building my own strength from the fact they were being so honest about their journey, that enabled me to then start telling my story. So I then went down the route of why I wanted to give up drinking. Main reason being, I had an alcoholic mum. I didn't want to end up like that. I wanted to change. I needed to change. And I knew that. So yeah, I had the resilience to push forward and put myself out there. You feel very vulnerable at first, but I went to a couple of sober social events that had been organized. I went to London to a sober event and met some people there. So we connected. There was a sober Halloween boat party that I went to as well, connected with some more people that way. There are lots of sober socials. When you first go, you feel very nervous and like a fish out of water because you're new to this whole sober life. Because this is just a whole new experience for you. You're used to having pre-drinks or going to the pub and feeling relaxed because you've had a drink. This is going in cold sober and needing to meet people and talk on a social level. But as soon as you get to these things, the people are just wonderful because we've all been there. We've all done it. We've all had our first day on our social event. And that's progressed then for me to I've been to sober camps. And more recently, I climbed Snowdon with a group of sober people. So, you know, I wouldn't have done
Great.
that if I hadn't found the sober community. That would not have happened. So I've climbed Snowdon through sobriety and through connections, which is amazing.
That is phenomenal. And actually, I saw the pictures of Snowdon. It was horrendous weather, wasn't it?
Oh, it was dreadful. It was 50 miles an hour winds when we got up there.
Are you even allowed to do it in 50 mile an hour winds? Is that not really bad?
No, I think they probably had started giving out warning messages that today's not the day to be climbing Snowdon. But by then we were already a third of the way up. So, you know, we continued. I mean, it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. It was hard work. The wind was so strong, it nearly blew us off our feet. But nobody was going to be blown off a mountain. You know, it wasn't that bad. We just carried on, supported each other, lots of banter, lots of fun, loads of support for people that might be caught behind because they're caught in a high gust of wind. And we just stuck together, a little sober seven we were. And the feeling of achievement is incredible. Now I've got the bug. I've got the hiking bug. So that's my new
You
hobby.
can keep the hiking bug. Mind you, I did say that about the running bug, didn't I? But you can
Yeah,
keep the hiking
see?
bug. Just because I'm not that fond of heights. I'm really, I'm not. And it's not something that I need to get over. I don't feel the need to go up high places, but
Yeah, I've heard
it's
people say
clear.
that, but it doesn't feel like that. It's not like you're on a great, I mean, it depends the climb you're doing, but for Snowdon, it's a really wide path. You don't feel that you're
You're
up
high.
high. I was the same as you though with running. Oh, I wouldn't even run for a bus. I'd rather wait another half an hour when I was younger. But I have now taken up running, so I've got some running shoes. I'm not as good as yourself.
I'm really chuffed that you just said I'm good. That's
Well,
amazing.
you are. You're incredible. You've just done 10K and you were running. I watched your story and you were running at 9K, saying it's getting a little bit harder now and you could actually speak. I would have been a mess by then. Runner's high is an actual thing.
It really is. And I was never the kid who ran, like you say. My line is that I couldn't run a bath. I could not move for anything. And I did the school races. I even convinced myself when my eldest was in the like the school races and they do the mum's race, and I was like, well, maybe I'm older now and maybe I'll be able to run. No, I was lost. I embarrassed myself. I was out of breath.
Oh,
I really
bad
couldn't do
children.
it. Yeah. So, I mean, it just, I just told myself, well, it's just something you can't do, which is just rubbish, isn't it, when you start to think about that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I told myself as well. Can't
And
do
so
it.
you've got the bug, you've tried it. And, you know, I started in April and I did the 10K at the end of September. So, yeah, I mean,
Incredibly.
it's amazing in 5, 6 months how you can go from genuinely not being able to run for more than 90 seconds. I couldn't do it. I had to run, walk, run, walk, run, walk. And you've got to deal with that little voice in your head that's going, this hurts. Go home. What are you doing this for? You don't need to run. You're too old. But what about your knees? It was my inner chatter.
Yeah, I mean, couch to 5K is perfect, isn't it, for people that want to start out? And you walk for that 5 minutes to start off with, and then you'll run for 1 minute, walk for 1 minute. And that's just a perfect way to start running, because just as you get to that point, you think, oh, this is hard. Then you get to walk again for a minute, and it builds up over that period of time. And here you are now doing 10K. I mean,
And I
watch
didn't
this
walk.
space. Maybe I'll be doing it with you. You didn't walk at all, and you
I
could
didn't walk at
talk at
all.
9K.
Now you say it like that, it's made me realize actually what an achievement it was.
It's huge.
Yeah, no, I didn't walk at all. I did see people sort of walking, and it's up to everybody. I was just determined. I had it in the back of my mind that, look, that's your, you know, up your sleeve. If you really struggle, you could just walk. You're going to complete it. But I wanted to see that I could run 10K without stopping. And yeah, so
And you did it.
who knows, and raise some money for alcohol change as well,
Yeah, which
which
is
is
fantastic. Yeah. And
an
that's,
amazing charity. And
it
you
is an
know,
amazing charity. Yes. Yeah. I mean, talking of charities, I've done a few little bits myself for charity as well through my sobriety, which is a wonderful feeling. Again, you feel like you can give back to the community, and it keeps you busy, it keeps you fit, it also gives you drive, and it gives you that sense of self-worth and achievement, doesn't it, when you can do something. But when you're doing it for others, it feels so good. I did a in my early sobriety, I did 100 mile walk in a month for breast cancer. I have lost a friend 6 years ago to breast cancer, sadly. She left four children, and she was only 36.
oh, I'm so
So it's something very close to my heart. And I have a very dear friend of mine who's just battled with breast cancer. So I felt, okay, for my first challenge, that's something I close to my heart, something I really want to do. So I did that, and that was brilliant, raised some money for that. I did a walk for NACOA as well earlier this year, which is for children of alcoholics. I am a child of an alcoholic, so I feel very passionate about that as well. It's really hard when you grow up with a parent that's an alcoholic, because you are constantly worrying for your parent all the time. The responsibility that is on your shoulders rather than the care that you should be receiving. So I feel like I'm on both sides, because then I, quite often happens, then progress to be a drinker myself, which is something I thought would never ever happen, but it creeps up on you, doesn't it? And then there I was, a drinking parent. But also charity wise, anything I can get my hands on really at the moment to do for charity, then I'm going to do it. Because, as you said yourself, what an achievement. You feel fantastic. You've done 10K for alcohol change, and you managed to run the whole thing. So there's my next challenge. I need
well,
to
there we
run a
go.
10K with you, Louisa.
Oh, come on, then let's. Well, certainly, I think there's one in April.
Oh,
What's your?
that gives me enough time.
It concerns me as a parent that I was drinking. Now, you know, I felt responsible. I felt I was always doing the right thing. I felt, you know, there was bath time and, you know, good food on the table. I didn't feel I was neglecting my children in any way. And I'm not saying somebody that drinks does. This is a really damp subject. However, I will hold my hands up and say I could have made better decisions. I could have been more patient. I could have spent longer on a bedtime story. I could have done a lot of different things. However, when you then go sober, you can't spend all that time looking back and going, oh, just beating yourself up, can you?
No, you can't. It's really important. I've worked and I'm still working with my relationship with my children. I feel I did the absolute best I could under the circumstances, like yourself. I did the bedtime stories, but could have spent longer on the bedtime stories. I don't feel I was as present as I could have been. In my experience, I felt my mum wasn't present at all for me. So I thought I was doing a fantastic job. You know, I'm not going to be like my mum. I'm going to be there for my children and make sure that they have this wonderful life. And I worked very, very hard on that to give them the best life I possibly could. And yet here I am, which every parent will be. I've got to a point in life, and you look back and go, well, I say every parent, most people, reflective people would say, I could have done things better. We're human beings. We're all going to make mistakes, whether you're drinking or you're not. There's going to be times that you are going to need to focus on yourself for whatever reason. And the effect that has on the children can be massive, but I think it depends on the level of drinking. Really, because you and I are talking about where we're not blackout. I was experiencing a blackout parent where I would come home and she would be passed out and unable to even speak. So, you know, if I woke up at night and needed her, she wasn't able to support me at all. So I think all parents have some feelings of guilt anyway. And what I've come to learn is, it's no good looking back on the past and obsessing over it and thinking about what you could have done differently. It's important to review it and assess how it was and what you might have been able to do differently as you're going through that process of healing. But then you just need to move on. And one of the biggest things I've learned through sobriety, which has been wonderful, is to learn how to live in the moment more, to live in the now. To stop going back to the past, to stop worrying too much about the future. I still have those moments. I'll overthink. Might get myself down a rabbit hole sometimes and think, okay, I'm struggling a bit here. I need to get myself back on track. But I can do that now, which is such a life-changing skill, where I can now say, okay, you're overthinking again. You're going down that rabbit hole. Let's get back to the moment. What's happening right now? Even to the simple fact that you're holding a cup of coffee in your hand and it's a nice coffee and it tastes good, you know, and the rain's on the windows, tiny, tiny little things that are happening here and now to stop your brain from that overthinking and that self-loathing and the guilt that you're feeling because what you could have done or what you should have done. And that's probably been the biggest, most wonderful change for me, I think.
Oh, massively. I completely agree because wine was the off switch. I don't know if it was for you, that sort of the worrying, the overthinking, the ruminating completely just shuts your mind off. It's not worth it because,
It's
again,
not.
you know, it doesn't switch it off completely. And sometimes it would rev it up. Did you find that when you drank, sometimes that you would get more obsessed or more worried about something?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've all, the drinkers of us have all had those moments when you're with your friends and then you start talking about something that's a bit heavy and deep. And you just get deeper and deeper, you know, and you're repeating yourself, talking over the whatever's bothering you at that time, you know, and really, what a wasted evening of just talking about, yes, it bothers you, but there's no point. There's no point because you're not going to achieve anything. You're not going to come to a final sudden decision. It's good that you're getting it off your chest, I suppose, but, you know, the drink just makes you keep on repeating those old patterns. They're still there. When you stop drinking, that's when you can stop those destructive cycles. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Absolutely. So you just stop drinking. You just, it's not like that at all, is it?
I know, no, it's not like that at all. Kind of though. I mean, I am really, really lucky, as I've said before, that there was a moment and I thought, this is enough. This can't go on. Reached out to my friend. I had a gin before I went to the AA meeting, my first AA meeting, and then I had a gin after, and then I stopped. That was it. I was done. Pulled it down the sink. Never went back. And for me, alcohol-free drinks really helped because that gave me the feeling of routine, perhaps. Also, it's that glamour that you feel. You've got a nice drink in your hand. I still like to drink a lovely mocktail, and it feels wonderful. You've got a mocktail in your hand. It feels great, tastes good, it looks good, and you don't have the shit effects of it. So it's nice. So if I thought, oh, really fancy a drink, I'd go and open an alcohol-free beer, and drink that, and I would get over that feeling very, very quickly, until eventually, 2 years, 3 months on, still haven't touched it. And I don't think I ever will. I feel I'm done. Why
That's
would
such a
I?
good place. I mean, I'm done. I love it.
Yeah, you get to
Yeah.
that point and you think, I'm done. You're no longer, a lot of people say in this community as well that it's not giving up. You're not giving up alcohol. People have this feeling, oh, people might say who are still drinking, Laura's given up drinking. I understand why they're saying that, but it doesn't feel like I've given up. I've gained so much. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I really have. I've gained so much in my life and I remember everything. Why would I ever want to go back to feeling like that, not remembering things, wasting my life, repeating things over and over again, feeling rubbish in the morning, being consumed with when the next drink was coming? I've got more money, I've got better health, I've lost weight, I've got clarity. My whole life is in a much, much better position. Still got the problems that come with it, like you say, difficulties with relationships or work or things like that. But I cope with it better. And not once do I think, oh, do you know what? I just want to have a drink and just forget about it, because that's not the answer.
It isn't the answer.
I don't miss it.
So I asked my guests on here to talk about the three things or three areas. Now, I know we've probably touched on some of these in conversation, but if we pinpoint them.
Definitely clarity. It's phenomenal. It really is. It's like a light switch going on. It's a light bulb moment for me. It's not something that can happen overnight, but there are moments, like light bulb moments, where you can be sitting in outside in nature or walking in nature, and you suddenly just see the trees so clearly. The clarity of a simple thing like a flower, and you look at that flower and just see the beauty within it. Now, I know that sounds a bit twee, but I'm just trying to condense that sort of clarity. And then beyond that, that expands to just clarity of life and who you are. I mean, everybody wants the answer to the meaning of life, but actually, we're never going to get that answer, are we? Ever. But if you've got the clarity to be able to accept what's happening, explore what's happening a bit, understand it, learn from it, and move forward from that, that's all the clarity that you need. And then you continue to the next. So we've all got a plan for our pension. I get that. But the clarity is live in the moment, live in the now. This is life. It's happening right now. Let's not look back. Let's not look too far forward. Let's enjoy what we've got now.
When I thought about going sober, I didn't think, oh, I know what I need more of. I need more clarity. What I thought was, I need not to feel like crap. I need self-esteem to be better. I need to feel better about myself. But some of the things that you gain, it's they weren't in your eye line of sight at all, were they?
Not at all. Not at all. Which is such a big surprise for me. You've got clearer, your senses are much clearer.
The bullshit detector's a bit clearer, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. I mean, touching on that, the clarity of understanding relationships more and what is good for you and what isn't. Relationships are a two-way street, aren't they? I mean, that's something I'll talk about in a minute. About connections and things, but the clarity to make the right decisions for you and be confident in those decisions, it's just wonderful. Yeah, no bullshit. You just are very clear. You've got your radar on. You're not going to put up with that anymore. You've got more self-worth as well, so you feel better about yourself. And instead of having a large group of friends because you want to be liked, you might have a smaller circle, but it's a really solid, sound, supportive circle where people want to support each other and care for each other. No agenda.
Yeah.
And so I don't have that in my life now. That's very freeing. So that's clarity as well. So you've got this brain that's just absorbed with all this shit going on about relationships or how somebody might have spoken to you or treated you. And, you can overthink. And then you go sober, and all of a sudden you've got this huge amount of headspace.
Yeah.
And that's when the clarity comes in. You're not obsessing so much about small things, because they're no longer that important,
Yeah.
which is that clarity.
Clarity and self-worth. Knowing your worth. Not everybody's, meant to like each other or get on or however, when you're drinking, you don't make the greatest judgments.
You don't.
Whether that be through low self-worth or whether that just be because you're not clear on what's going on.
Exactly, because you haven't got the clarity. You'll have the little messages in there, and you'll have that self-doubt, and you'll think, why did they say that? But you just ignore it and sweep it under the carpet. Whereas now you can very clearly see if someone has an agenda and they're not good for you. And like you say, we don't all like each other, and that's absolutely fine. We're humans. We're all different with different opinions and taste. But one of the biggest things I say a lot within the sober community, and I push it very much, is be kind. That's the biggest thing for me. Just always be kind. You never know what someone's going through.
Yeah.
I'm just going to keep being me and continue to be kind. If you're not kind, I haven't got any space for you in my life. The clarity for me is, okay, I'm not going to put myself in that situation anymore, and I will remove myself, and that's fine.
So, how were you as a drinker then? Were you somebody that would find herself in positions where maybe people had taken advantage
Oh,
or? So this is
very much
something
so.
being sober, having that clarity to be able to listen to your own instinct.
Yeah, definitely. I was a huge people pleaser. And I guess that stems very much from my background as well. I didn't really have, the love of or the ideal love from a parent to give me that stability. So I was always searching to be loved at the end of the day, which sounds very sad. But I had a lot of fun, and I've met some really wonderful people along the way. But I've also met people that have thought nothing of being unkind to me because they just think they can, because I'm a people pleaser. And I'll think immediately, or I used to think, well, what did I do to create that? And I'd look at myself rather than just go, okay, well, that's on them. That's their problem or their issue. Let them deal with that, and I'll do me and continue to be kind. And certainly I've had lots of relationships in the past. As I said, I was a party girl, so I'd have people round all the time and cook meals and we'd get the round in and make sure everybody's glass was full. And I found myself in some really tricky situations sometimes where I felt bullied, actually, and I was bullied. But that wouldn't happen now. Not only because I wouldn't allow it, but also I think you have a stance when you have that clarity, and nobody is even going to want to try and mess about and treat you badly because they can see that you're a confident person, and it's just not going to work.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes
In
it does, it really does make sense actually. That sort of when you are that sociable but people pleaser and you're maybe pouring the drinks, buying the drinks, I mean, everybody's gonna flock around you, aren't they? But actually, it's about the quality of people.
exactly. We had a big party house, had a swimming pool in the back garden, so it was party central at mine. And we had some really wonderful times, but I thought it was the perfect life for my children. We were all having a fab, they'd have all their friends round and they'd be in the pool and we'd be in the pool. It would be great. We adults would be drinking. But actually, when I've spoken to them since, they said that they didn't really enjoy that so much. Yes, they had some fun with their friends, but I think they found it a bit much.
Yeah.
It was a bit much. They just wanted a normal life where they could just chill out and not think about when the next party was and all these people were coming round and have all these people in their home. Must have been tough. For me, I thought I was doing them a great service because I was teaching them people skills and, share the love. But actually, I think they wanted a bit more of a peaceful life.
That is so interesting about sort of children parties, even the dancing in the kitchen. I've heard somebody actually say that they would be, having a few drinks, kitchen disco, isn't this great? I think it was Emily actually on the podcast that I did with her where she was like, isn't this wonderful, kids? And actually,
Yeah.
no, because
No.
you're inconsistent. At the best, you're inconsistent.
Yeah.
Let's all stay up, let's eat sweets. Well, actually,
Exactly.
kids, as much as they think they might want that, they
Yeah.
crave that consistency and some of the rules.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly it.
So what's your second thing?
So my second thing is they kind of gel into each other really, but connections and relationships for sure. We've already discussed that. I make far better connections with people now as a sober person than I ever did. So I also trust my judgment more, and the people that I'm connecting with are beautiful human beings that have been through difficulty and pain through the sober community. And I feel I can trust them. I feel safe. It's like a safe environment to be in. Also, relationships I need to back away from, as we've already discussed. That's a big one for me. I'm aware of that. And if I need to back away, then I will. There's no harm in doing that. Sometimes it's self-preservation, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. So if that's your second one, connections, I mean, sober connections, the sober community, friendships, that clarity, they do link very nicely to each other, don't they?
They do. Yeah, definitely. I've met some really incredible people that I think will be my friends for life. And a lot of these friendships, like our friendship, is online. We haven't actually met in person yet, have we,
Oh, we
Louisa?
will when
And
we
I
go
feel like,
running.
well, we will. Well, obviously, when we're doing the 10K, I'll be chatting away through the whole 10K. And I feel I've learned so much from you. We've had a really good laugh as well and a giggle. And it's really upbeat and positive and fun, but also understanding, and it feels loyal and kind. There's, as I say, no agenda. I'm not looking for a relationship with you for what I can get out of you. It's just pure. I've got that with a lot of other people within the community, but I've also met quite a lot of people as well and really forged some great friendships. Like Michael, for example, I'm really close with him. Fran, I've become very close with. Also, these connections have helped me to explore other avenues in my life. Like with Fran, she is really good with poetry and does poetry events. So I've dabbled a little bit in my poetry side and didn't realize quite how good I was at that. And that's been a really nice way to explore. Also, drawing, again, relationships have helped me. Emmy's a really good friend of mine that I met through the sober community.
She's beautiful, Emmy.
Oh, she's amazing. Yeah, she's a really, really beautiful person inside and out. I love her to bits and very, very supportive. She does a lot of charity work herself. She's a very, very good listener. And I'd mentioned to her that I quite like the idea of drawing. I hadn't done any drawing for years, but I quite like the idea of it. And she sent me a book in the post, and it's called By the End of This Book, You Will Be Able to Draw. That's what it's called. How wonderful is that? Through that connection, I've mentioned something. She sent me this book and I've picked up this hobby of drawing. So that wouldn't have happened.
But yeah, it is that the quality of connection that you get as well. And I think, I don't know if it's a thing about the sober community or whether it's because with any sort of community where you've all been through something very similar, that then you can come to each other despite backgrounds, despite where you live, you know, or the sort of work that you do, but just with an understanding of how you felt in that moment when you said, I'm going to stop.
Absolutely. And I think we're all willing as well to be vulnerable and open up to each other in a way perhaps we may not have done before. And if it hadn't been for sobriety, we may never have. It definitely connects us. I don't think there's any community quite like this. It is quite a special community of people, constantly willing really to explore how to do better, how to feel better, how to progress, how to evolve, what's next. You know, you've got all this spare time you didn't have before. I'm never bored, even when I'm not doing anything. I quite enjoy relaxing. I've got no problem with lounging around and watching Netflix and eating a bit of chocolate, you know. But the connection that you have is out there. So at any point, if I was feeling I was having a wobble at all, I know I've got people that I can talk to and that I can rely on them, and I call them genuine friends, even though I've never met them.
So what's your third thing?
Resilience. I've had a lot of that in my life and needed it. On my first year soberversary, I had resilience tattooed on my forearm, under a sunflower. It's very key to me. I think it's important to keeping on. Things get thrown at us. We need to be resilient in life as humans. We all have these struggles. It's how we manage them, isn't it? So I think each thing that's happened to me through my life, and there have been quite a lot of difficult things, I've handled them with resilience, and I'm proud of that. Very proud of that. That being said, there have been some really tricky times where I felt incredibly low, and you feel you have no resilience. But we can all pick ourselves up, right?
You can, yeah. What did you do in those moments where you wondered where the resilience was?
Sometimes in the early days, I think I closed in on myself a bit, but I allowed myself to have those feelings. A lot of people told me that it's important to let yourself really feel because you are grieving. You are grieving a life that you've been living, and now things are changing, and you kind of got to get your head around what that feels like. And as I said before, initially you feel like you've got to give up drinking, but then when you come through that process, you realize you actually haven't given up anything. You've gained so much. So I was very kind to myself, and I let myself curl up in bed, escape with some TV, have a cry if I needed to, really let myself mourn those feelings of waste and inadequacy and time lost. And through that process, I then learned the resilience, which I talked about earlier, where I no longer need to go back and really obsess or overthink about those things that are really, really tough. I can bring myself back into the moment and reevaluate what's going on here and now, and then I can get through that. But I just allowed myself. There's no guilt. There should be no guilt in resting. I think a lot of people feel they're being lazy. Sometimes you need it. If you're on a low, let your body rest. So important. If you eat that chocolate if you want to, you're not drinking. So that's a good thing.
So obviously this episode will be going out in October. It's Sober October. There's lots of people stopping drinking for October. What would be your advice to someone who's doing it?
First of all, do it. Absolutely do it. It is life changing. I know people that have done Sober October. They do the month, and are very pleased and proud that they haven't had that drink for that month and they feel much better and will then go back to drinking, and that's absolutely their choice. I think go in with an open mindset, because if you get through that 4 weeks of no alcohol, why not make it five? Why not make it six? Why not just keep going and see what happens? You'll save yourself time, money, heartache, overthinking. Life will take a whole new path for you, but a really, really positive one. So I'd say for anybody considering it, absolutely go for it. You've got nothing to lose and absolutely everything to gain. And this isn't someone talking in the sober community. A lot of people will think, well, of course you'll say that because you drank too much and then you had to stop. I genuinely believe life is so much better without putting that drug, that poison into our bodies. How rubbish we feel, how awful you feel the next day. Life's for living. Live it. Give up the alcohol and embrace everything that comes your way, which is what a lot of us are doing, which is why so many people in the sober community, like yourself, will take up running or will take up cold water therapy, or we'll explore and look for new things. It's not because we're bored and unhappy. It's because we're suddenly just excited by life and we want to get our teeth into some new challenge that we can get involved with. And with that challenge comes connections. I mean, yesterday when you did your 10K, you were with friends, you were with people. Again, that's your connection. So, and here you are looking incredible. Your skin looks fantastic. I know that you had rosacea before,
It, yeah.
when you were drinking and you had skin issues, but now look at you. You're absolutely glowing. You look incredible. You've lost loads of weight. You're so fit. Maybe I'll get there then if I can do this 10K with you next April.
Well, let's do it. I mean, it's really strange the shifts that happen. I think if I were to sort of contemplate what I would say to somebody doing Sober October or Dry January or any of the sort of marketed months where people give it a go is don't sulk. Don't count down till when you can have a drink again. Use it.
Exactly.
Be really curious. What could my life look like? What does a weekend look like without alcohol? You know,
Yeah.
you don't need to make it a big leap to what does my life look like without alcohol? What does a Saturday morning look like?
Yeah.
I'm not hungover. Like you say, not everybody drinks the way that we drank. I mean, I drank most days. People often ask me that question. Most days, bottle of wine would easily go. But even people I know that drank just at weekends, when they don't do that, and you're actually getting that momentum going with sobriety, and you're getting that clarity, and your body's getting a chance to heal, like you just said that I had rosacea, really bad rosacea, and I haven't had it. Since month three was the last time I had it, month three of sobriety. So it doesn't go the minute you go sober. That's why I would also say do it longer than a month.
Yeah, I think so. I think the 3 month is a magic mark, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I actually had that work really bad bout of rosacea at month three. Weight wise, I think I lost a bit of weight, but I don't think it really gathered momentum till about month three. You know, you are going to see benefits in the first month, but if you can just hang in there and just keep focusing on
Yeah.
what you're gaining.
I think so. Keep going. Don't look at it that just it's just a month, like you say. A day at a time, yes. Enjoy it. Enjoy the feelings. And gratitude is a huge one as well, isn't it? Wake up in the morning and just think, I feel great this morning. I'm grateful. I feel great. I haven't had a drink. Interestingly, I was diagnosed with a wheat gluten intolerance, and I've been very poorly probably from the age of about 12 and didn't know why, and they told me I had IBS, irritable bowel syndrome. It wasn't until I went to see a private specialist they suggested perhaps it's gluten, so cut gluten out and see what happens. So I cut gluten out for 1 week and I was cured and thought, wow, can't believe that. All along that was the problem. Now, interestingly, this is very strange but true. When I gave up drinking, I started to introduce a bit of gluten, and I don't have a problem with it now. I don't eat it a lot, But I don't have a problem with it now. I don't have an irritated bowel. Everything feels fantastic. And I believe that's because I gave up alcohol.
I had IBS as well, and
And has
actually,
it
the amount of
gone?
people, yeah, it's gone. It went, and actually, it is psychologically crippling, IBS.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter whether physically you're suffering, psychologically you're always scanning where's the nearest loo. And actually, towards the end of me drinking, it was so debilitating sometimes that I would be scared to go somewhere if I didn't know there were going to be loos there, or I didn't
Yeah,
know
same.
what the loos were. Actually, what was really strange yesterday at the 10K was I wouldn't have coped with the thought of standing, and what I've got to stand at a start line for about 50 minutes, and where's the loo's going to be? I wouldn't have coped with it. It didn't
Yeah.
even enter my head. So a lot of the time, it wasn't the physical; it was the psychological side of it, where you would overworry then.
Yeah, very much so. So I, you know, not only was I obsessing about alcohol, I was also obsessing about food and what I was eating, what I was putting into my body, and where the toilet was, like you say. I mean, I went up Snowdon and had no concerns or worries whatsoever. Now, I wouldn't have been able to do that before because I'd have thought, just like you, oh, what if I need the toilet on the way up there? And I'd have been fearful of that. So incredible changes. I think it is a poison. It is bad for us. It's accepted in society as a positive thing, which is, I think, really sad and a real shame. I think let's look at it differently. I think we're getting there, don't you, Louisa? There's a lot more adverts on TV even for alcohol-free, but at the end of the day, it's taxed and it is money that goes to the government, and it's all over the world, but it's the biggest killer, and we shouldn't ignore that.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of conversations that need to be had, which is why I was so pleased to be able to support Alcohol Change, because, that's what they're doing, raising awareness of the harms of alcohol, because I'm
Yeah.
blind to it. It's you don't to in fairness, you don't want to see it when you're drinking. You don't want to. It's a bit like when you smoke. You don't want to think about it.
Absolutely.
But I think if we could all have a little tiny bit more awareness as to the fact it's a toxin and it's affecting every organ in the body, not just everybody, the liver gets all the press, but every organ, the brain, the stomach, even our bowels, as we've just discussed so beautifully.
Yes,
I
yes, yes, we did.
think we did very, very well there, very tastefully.
We did. I thought we did as well, because I could tell you some shocking stories, but well, I'll save that for when we see each other.
We'll look forward to that on the start line of the 10K. We'll share our
Yes.
shopping stories together.
Yay.
It's been such an amazing conversation. It's been so lovely to be able to chat to you face to face.
It's been
Hello,
really
everything.
nice. Thank you for having me.
Good luck with the running.
Yes, thanks to you. I'm committed now to another event. The hiking, the running, it's all fantastic. Life isn't perfect, but I'm as happy as I could be.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you'd like to find out more about Laura, I'll put her Instagram handle in the show notes. And as always, if you'd like to find out more about myself or working with me, you can head to louisaevans.com, where you'll find links to some of the resources that I've put together, including the Dry January podcast series, which you can listen to throughout October if you'd like to help you with your first month of sobriety or any other time of the year. You'll also find a link to my audiobook, Becoming a Sober Rebel, the Sober Resilience course that I've put together, which you can complete in your own time at your own pace online, or you can find out more about working with me if you'd like one-to-one support. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope you've enjoyed it.